DiBartolo. The name is synonymous for many things: passion, generosity, winning. Edward J. DiBartolo Jr. was born on November 6, 1946, the very same year the San Francisco 49ers franchise took the field in the All-American Football Conference. Mr. D, Eddie, whatever you knew him as, was a pioneer in many ways. Youngstown's finest became a leader in business and in the most visible sport in America, professional football. There would be no Vince Lombardi trophies on display at 49er headquarters without the efforts of Mr. D. He hired Hall of Fame coach Bill Walsh and legendary general manager John McVay. He developed the blueprint for success in the most competitive sport in our country. Together, they drafted Hall of Famers and underachievers and then gave them the necessary tools to succeed at the highest level. The 49ers traveled in style. They had the best planes, the best hotels, the best amenities available to do their job. Win. DiBartolo won 5 Super Bowls in a 14-year span. He became the first owner ever to win 5 world championships, which is why he's the 22nd contributor ever to be enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. A fitting home for an Ohio native. Sure, we'll remember the wins and the moments after the Super Bowls where Mr. D raised the shiny trophy and thanked his coaches and players. We'll look back fondly on the man who paced the sidelines late in the game and was the first person to greet his players, win or lose, in the locker room. We'll always tell our children about the man that made our franchise better. There's a reason why his players think of him so highly. He was sincere. He was the best. He was great for the game and always there for his family, the 49ers. The 49ers are a winner because Mr. D is a winner. The 49ers are legendary because Mr. D is a legend. It's only fitting that he's celebrated alongside the heroes of the game, many of which were a part of San Francisco's locker rooms. Mr. D is an icon, and we're proud to celebrate his story. For as long as they talk about the San Francisco 49ers, they'll talk about Edward J. DiBartolo Jr.
Faith. By definition, it's something that is felt with strong conviction without tangible evidence of its existence. Many claim to have it, but how do we attain it? It can't be held. It can't be sold. But it can be passed down. Faith is invaluable to those who feel it. How is it that this belief can unite us regardless of our differences? It's because of conviction, that feeling inside that links so many, from the far corners of the earth to the closest reaches of our neighborhoods. Faith is all around us. Faith springs from a glorious past forward to a promising future. The faith that those who not so quietly defeated rivals and redefined record books would inspire their brethren of today to reach such epic accomplishments. And all along, there are those who cheer. In their minds, they envision. In their hearts, they believe. And because of that, they are simply known as the faithful.
Hey, boss. How you doing? Love you. Just want you to know I love you.
You have to look around this room, all the players that came out to support Eddie. This has been a long time coming, and all these players, what we were able to do on the football field, win football games, win championships, do all that stuff, just to see everybody in this room tonight in support of this man is fantastic. Eddie DiBartolo, we love you. Thank you for everything that you did.
All righty, thank you. Thanks, boss.
Way to go, boss. We love you, boss.
Love. When it comes to Edward J. DiBartolo Jr., there's an awful lot of it to go around. The owner of the San Francisco 49ers for 23 years, DiBartolo left a legacy that could be considered impossible to match. There was the 5 Super Bowl championships.
Back in July, when we traveled to Tokyo, we had a mission, we had a quest, and we have one hell of a football team, and I love you, God bless you, and thank you for being world champions.
There was the way he raised the bar as an owner.
They treat you nice here.
Mr. DiBartolo likes to have the best.
But more than anything, there was the unparalleled love he had for his players. and they for him.
World's best owner.
Right here.
We got him.
DeBartolo's father, Edward Sr., was an Ohio real estate titan with an interest in sporting properties. But it took a twist of fate and a lot of patience for the DeBartolos to end up in San Francisco.
Go back to 1959. My dad tried to buy the Cleveland Browns. There was this gentleman from New York, an advertising man. His name was Art Modell, and he was awarded the right to buy them. Al Davis made a call to Joe Thomas and said that the San Francisco 49ers were for sale. And at the time, I think that was the only team that was for sale. We had to really think twice about it because back then it was a 3,000-mile-away journey. Great city, you know, great franchise.
So the DeBartolos met Jane and Josephine Morabito, widows of the team's founders, Tony and Victor. And on March 31st, 1977, control of the San Francisco 49ers were transferred to Edward J. DeBartolo Jr. He was just 30 years old.
Well, it was tough. They had a good coach, a really, really good coach, and a nice man, Monty Clark. But I wanted our own people in there, and I had to let him go, which was really tough. And that didn't go over very big.
A coach like Monty, who is really an outstanding coach, you hate to see him leave.
I met a lot of the players, and it's really funny because the majority of the players back in 1977 when I was there were older than me.
Some of the rumors were that he received the 49ers as a present for his birthday or something like that, but he was a young guy. There were guys on the team that were older than our owner. The team was unsettled because management had changed and they brought in new management. So that was the hard part of having assimilated and worked over the years and built a pretty good team of veterans and really having to break that down and then build it up again.
Eddie, he came in early and listened to some people that he probably shouldn't have, and that's why we went through some early difficulties, I think.
It took a while. The first year, Bill Walsh, it was a 2-14 year, and I was there for every one of those games. Before Bill Walsh came, that last year was a 2-14 year. Back-to-back, 2-14. That's not something that I really like to talk about, but that's reality, and that was the way it was. We were not a very good team.
It took a while, and I went through a couple of coaches, two or three coaches, actually, before I got lucky and hired Bill Walsh.
We would all get together and watch it there, have this big, huge, feast. We'd try to imitate Joe Montana and Jerry Rice throwing passes to each other and tackling each other in the living room until, we got yelled at by the family, hey, settle down. After that, I just loved every single game. I had to be at the games, became a season ticket holder at Candlestick. And still here at Levi Stadium. I think I'm going to be a season ticket holder for the rest of my life. My name is Abel, and I've been faithful since 77.
I grew up in Youngstown, Ohio. Really a great town to raise a family and be in a family. Just a hardworking town, a great place to be from, and I'm very proud. I'm proud to be from Youngstown, Ohio.
The importance of family to Eddie DeBartolo Jr. is impossible to overstate. His father, Eddie DeBartolo Sr., is the model of an American success story. The son of Italian immigrants, he founded the Edward J. DeBartolo Corporation at the end of World War II. Starting with just a handful of strip malls outside of Youngstown, the DeBartolo Corporation turned into the premier shopping mall developer in the United States.
I used to go with him often, go to the various jobs, learn the way he was and the way he operated and how he was on jobs. I spent, a great, great deal of time with my father, and he was a phenomenal man and a great, great influence.
And there was no greater influence than how DeBartolo Sr. ran his corporation. As a family. And when son Eddie took the reins of the 49ers, he was determined to treat it the same way.
I could see the way that my father operated with people. He cared. The people were part of his family.
Knowing a little bit about his father,
It was the same thing that his father did with his corporation and with his people. And Eddie just brought that on to this organization. And it just made you want to go out and play.
I think all these players that were so vitally important to the success of our teams, they knew that I really, really cared. And I cared about their families. I cared about their health. I cared about their wives, their girlfriends, their mothers. If Bill, God rest his soul, if Bill was here, he would say, because we talked about it, how much that helped.
I'm glad you're with us. I'm glad to be here.
He treats everybody the same, and he's amazing. He's one of those guys that remembers faces and names, and it doesn't matter.
His family approach to this football team isn't just Jerry Rice, Joe Montana, Ronnie Lott. It's not just the Hall of Fame stars. It's the way he treated a low-level office employee, the way he treated traveling secretaries, anybody who helped them win a Super Bowl in any form whatsoever. Eddie D will take care of them, and he'll take care of them for life.
Mr. D, he taught me what family's all about the sacrifices, commitment, you know, and being a man, you know, he was a man of his word. He never put his foot down on you. You know, he never came in and act like, you know, that he was powerful man. He came in and act like your brother. That said a lot about the man.
This has got to be heaven for you.
Well, I think it's heaven for all of us because we're a family. This is a family. We're all together.
He embraced everybody. Everybody was a family. It was a family atmosphere. He created that atmosphere.
The key to all of this was, man, damn, we were a family, man.
Eddie DeBartolo was a beloved leader, more friend than employer. But even those who loved him dearly remember a different side of him. Because as fiercely loyal as DeBartolo was, he was also just plain fierce.
I kicked in a few coolers. I kicked in a few other things. I think that the story that Charles Haley tells, we were playing on a Monday night. He got thrown out of the game. I went down when Charles got thrown out, and he was sitting in a little room, and he was sulking, and there was a TV there. And I came around the corner, and he looked at me. He said, Mr. D, he said, you mean they threw you out too? And I said, no, they didn't throw me out. I came down to spend some time with you. So we watched the last 10 minutes of the game. And we still had a chance to win the game. Richard Dent made a phenomenal play. He jumped over the line, and he sacked Joe Montana. There was a small TV, and I was so incensed. I took the TV, and I threw it against the wall right over Charles's head, and it smashed against the wall. He looked at me. He said, you know, you're crazier than I am.
His emotions showed in everything that he did. He wore them on his sleeve. A fierce competitor. Fierce competitor.
We didn't lose a lot of games, but, man, when we did lose and he came to the locker room, it wasn't very pretty.
I think about this one line he had in an interview. He just said, you know,
the main thing is I don't like to lose. That's it.
And that was him. Every day, he hated to lose. He wanted you to fight and compete. And it wasn't just fighting for him. He was alone. He felt like he was right alongside you, fighting with you.
If he could have got out there and ran a punt return back, I think he would have.
The person that comes in second is a loser.
I think the thing that sticks out about Mr. D the most for me is just his competitiveness. And he brought that to the team whether we won or lost. He wanted you to be perfect. And he knew we could be that good. And if we weren't, he let us know.
Eddie D was not the easiest person to work for. Players were under a lot of pressure. Coaches were under a lot of pressure. But what he did was he created an environment where he expected to win, but also the players, the coaches, the front office people, everybody expected to win.
If Bill Walsh or George Seifert or whoever was coaching the team would say, Eddie, you know what would really help if we really had this? Eddie would just do it, but win. That was it, which is exactly what fans want. That's what they want in an owner.
There was certainly an element of players and coaches who feared Eddie DeBarlo. The saying goes that he ordered Carmen Policy to fire Bill Walsh 7 or 8 times, but eventually everybody would come back together, cooler heads would prevail, and the 49ers would go out and win football games.
He was just that intense about us being successful and having what we need to be successful, and it paid off.
1979, I started following the Niners. In 81, I was solidified as a fan. I'm a product of the catch. When he made that catch, that was it. I was hooked forever. Faithful for me is my contact and my interaction with the other fans. I'm just one fan, but together we make a special bond. You walk by people and you say hello to each other, pat each other on the back. For me, I hope to just be a really excellent representation of what it means to be faithful. I'm 49er Mark, and I've been faithful since 79.
It was not smooth sailing in Hall of Fame owner Edward J. DeBartolo's first few seasons at the helm of the San Francisco 49ers. In 1977 and 78, his team suffered 23 losses, while winning only 7 games. Entering the 1979 campaign, he set his sights on a 4th head coach in 3 years, Stanford's Bill Walsh.
Had an interview set up with Bill at the Fairmont Hotel. I had a room there. I met him up in the room. We introduced ourselves. We had a little bit of small talk. We talked about his philosophy. We talked about, I think, family as much as anything besides his philosophy. And I don't think we were together longer than 15 minutes. And I knew that he was the man that I wanted to be the head coach and run the football team. I offered him the job right then and there.
The result? A second consecutive 2-14 season. Not an iconic start for a man who would go on to become one of the most iconic coaches in the game's history. And yet, the promise was there.
During the course of a season, the 1979 49ers seized time to transform themselves from a team that had been nowhere to a team with an identity and a sense of purpose. This revitalized squad enabled those with patience to realize that better things can be achieved in San Francisco. It's just a matter of time.
The improvement showed in 1980 when the 49ers won 6 games. The 1981 draft ended up as one of the franchise's best and was then coupled with the addition of veteran talent.
You have this great influx of Ronnie Lott and Eric Wright and Carlton Williamson. You've got a defensive secondary brought in one draft. You could tell they brought in Hacksaw Reynolds from the Rams. He was a great leader. Things were changing and things had changed.
Starting off the season, I didn't think it was anywhere near a playoff caliber team. But as the year went on, they got better and got better. You know, there was a turning point. And I think the turning point of that team that year was when we played Pittsburgh. They had just come off a Super Bowl, and it was a real tough game. We beat them 17-14 that year. I think that really did it. I think that was the impetus that we needed.
The 1981 49ers finished the regular season 13-3, good for the best record in the NFL and home field advantage throughout the playoffs.
Then we played the Giants. We beat them, and then we had to play Dallas again. I guess the rest is NFL history.
I was thinking about it. They say Rose Bowl is the granddaddy of them all, but being here, it's overcoming that. This might be the great-great granddaddy right now.
The championship game against Dallas in 81. I'll probably never forget until the day I die, because I went down on the field basically because I thought we were going to lose the game. The field was jammed with photographers and jammed with police. And all the police were on horses, and I mean big horses. We were driving, and I knew that. We were down driving. I heard screams, and I heard touchdown. And I didn't know it was Dwight because I was literally behind the biggest horse
you would ever imagine in your life. I mean, I came up to about half of his behind. And the policeman on top of the horse turned to me and said, Dwight Clark caught the touchdown pass.
Three of the most important people in my life didn't even see the catch. My dad thought he was going to have a heart attack, so he left the room. He was watching on TV. Joe got knocked on his butt, so he didn't see it. And Eddie was behind a horse's ass. So, but it all worked out. They heard the roar, so they knew something good had happened.
Throws into the end zone.
And you guys earned it and deserve it because you're the best team in football. And I'm so proud. And I don't think that anything could top this. Anything in my life. And I love you all and I thank you.
As Mr. D said earlier, the rest is NFL history. The 49ers returned to Pontiac, Michigan, where they had fallen to the Lions in the very first game of the season. This time, their opponent was the Cincinnati Bengals in Super Bowl XVI. A key goal line stand in the third quarter proved the catalyst for a 26-21 win and the first championship in 49ers history.
49ers have won it, a team that confounded pro football observers throughout the year.
But it wouldn't stop there. The 49ers went on to win four more Super Bowl championships over a decade and a half, cementing themselves as one of the great dynasties in sports history.
Congratulations, boss. You got one for the other hand.
Stepped up, throws. Touchdown, 49ers! And the 49ers have won the Super Bowl.
The San Francisco 49ers become the first team to win back-to-back Super Bowls.
Back-to-back.
Since the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Young goes deep middle. He's got Jerry Rice. Touchdown, 49ers!
Everybody in this room gave that commitment, and that's why we have this. Steve.
I never really took the time over that period to really sit back and really relish and enjoy everything. You know, five Super Bowls is phenomenal. But, you know, our guys think that that team could have probably won eight Super Bowls. But, you know, we're thrilled to have been where we were, what we were able to accomplish with the team, and what we were able to do for our fans.
I became a Niner fan in 1981, learned the game of football, and lost interest for baseball and football only now.
I'm a diehard Niners for life.
It's part of my family. It's been part of my family for about three generations.
She had no choice from the day she was born.
Angel Montana went and threw a bump to Jerry Rice on the right side, and we won the game.
Good old Joe.
My name is Raj.
My name is Anjali.
And our family has been faithful since 79.
Niners, baby!
Next week on The Faithful.
There's this insistence by national media not to put this guy in the Hall of Fame. To me, it's the most asinine thing ever. He should be in there, and I say this often, right next to the other owners, individual owners that have five Super Bowl trophies, and there are none.
If we're talking about somebody who you cannot write the history of the NFL without, Eddie DeBartolo is one of those guys.
When you think about Hall of Famers, you think about winning. Mr. D, he won five Super Bowls. He presented five players. You know, if the standard is winning, why is he not here? You know?